Five, four, three, two, one, zero, ignition, liftoff.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
And welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Hey, I want to say thank you to everybody for listening in. Thanks for Nolan and Sandy. You know, I got one before we talk about what's happening, because I know all three of us are just a ton of projects happening right now, which is always great. But anybody listening in, if you could take the 8 seconds it is to do the iTunes rating, it's pretty funny. We've had a number of listeners, like a lot, and we don't know how to, I'm not really an expert at the whole social media and this whole podcast thing, but if everybody would do a quick favor, do a quick rating on iTunes, one, it's a great thing for us to see, and number two is it'll really help us boost those numbers. We'd like to see, we're kind of benchmarking ourselves so that this year we can go a bit higher than what we've been seeing on the listeners, so that would be awesome. Nolan, Sandy, what's happening?
Well, here in the office, I finally got my huge 10-foot built-in desk that I've been waiting for a couple of years, and finally found a place to do it. We rented a scissor lift to get it in through the window, and
Beautiful.
It's 10 feet of walnut.
Did you pick out the wood? Did you have this? It's just gorgeous. If you people
I'll put a picture up.
Maybe
we can put a picture.
It's
on
very
it.
Good.
So I'm happy. I'm very happy in my nice new office space.
Are you sitting at your new desk right now?
I am.
Oh, you sound much better.
Does it? Nice resonance off the wood.
Absolutely better. It's already made an improvement.
So that's the that's one thing. The other thing is my news is that March 21st, which is coming up, I'll be launching a new regular webinar for the American Management Association that I've done a lot with. I have a every other month webinar and presentation, but starting on the 21st, the alternating month will be something called the 1 Second Chart. And that is something sort of new, but it's a continuation of a lot of my training on data visualization. But that's a really phenomenal 90-minute webinar on how to create charts that can be not created in 1 second, but read by an audience in 1 second. And these days, I think that's really key for your audiences to be able
that's
to
great.
Understand your data stories instantly.
My news is I finally got my Surface Studio.
Really?
I know. And okay, so I was sick the last couple of weeks, and before that, I traveled for 2 weeks. So it's been sitting on my desk. I did finally this last weekend pull it out of the box. I took pictures. I had high, lofty goals of doing an opening video, but it did not. And an unboxing video, but that didn't happen.
Oh, that would
just
be
took
cool.
a lot of pictures.
You could put it back in the box and then take it out.
Pretend. I know. I was very careful, I'll tell you, taking everything out. Okay, so as a PC right now, I'm impressed. It runs like a PC. I have not had the opportunity to really start working with the dial, the hinge that allows me to work like I'm on a
giant tablet or architecture table.
Drafting table. That's the word I was looking for. So I'll keep you up to date on that as I start working on it. I know the dial really is nothing but a glorified mouse at this point. But I have, you know, because we work in PowerPoint, we have lots of ideas on how we can maybe improve that, how Microsoft can improve that.
So does it come with like a digital air hockey game that you can use the puck for?
That's perfect.
That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, there
that's
you go.
One puck, so you got to play the computer.
Well, yeah.
No, that would be perfect. No, unfortunately, it does not. Or maybe it does, and I just haven't got there yet.
report back.
Yeah, so we'll all be taking photos of our desks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
So Sandy says she's not high tech, but she was the very first person I knew that had a Microsoft Studio Surface Book. Mm-hmm. Now you're the very first person I know outside of Microsoft that has a Surface Studio. You're very high tech.
Well, I have a lot of confidence in Microsoft, and I'm putting that out there. I'm saying that because I don't want them to disappoint me. I work with Microsoft products every day, and my goodness, shouldn't they work the best on a Microsoft hardware platform?
I think they should.
Yeah. So some people think it's a gamble. I don't. I think it's a cost of doing business.
I think it's going to be phenomenal. I'm really excited to look in. Yep. What's happening? We got a ton of project work, but you know what? I'm going to talk about something even more exciting than projects because I live in Southern California. It has been raining pretty much nonstop here.
I'm thinking about you. Oh my goodness.
I mean, it's got to be on the news external. I mean, so here's the deal. I heard this on the Southern California averages 10 inches of rain a year. Like that's it. We get 10 inches. That's actually a lot compared to the desert areas. We're barely into March and we've already surpassed 12 inches of rain.
Wow.
And it's just a continuous rain. Now I'm saying that as our recording date today, which is a few days before release, it's like 80 and sunny outside and you know, I'm ready to go to the beach, but it's been raining a lot. So that's kind of like a big deal. It's kept me inside the studio a lot. So I've gotten a lot of work done.
Nice.
News. What's in the news? Anybody have great presentation-oriented news? What do we got?
Well, I haven't. Have you guys checked out? I saw the release of the new PowerPoint digital ruler. Have you guys looked into that at all?
Yeah, I played with it a little bit. It's on the PC, right?
Okay.
Only at this point.
So on the Fast Insider, right?
I believe so. Yeah. Okay. So it's a little hard to explain. Actually,
we saw a demo of it. Come on, yeah. We got to know everything.
I mean, I played with it a little bit. I'm still trying to figure out. It's a big, thick ruler that you can have pop up on your screen, and you can turn it. It's got like the angle, you know, the live angle. So as you rotate it, the angle goes, and then you're able to draw with a pen or the mouse straight lines as you rotate this thing. So you can draw a whole bunch of parallel lines at any angle. Now that's what you can do with it, that's great for some people, I guess, especially if you're on a tablet. Uh-huh. I'm not sure what you do beyond that.
I think it's definitely geared towards touch input. Being able to draw a straight line is hard as compared to using a mouse or even a trackpad, really. I'm excited to see some of the future uses of it. I think it's a good improvement. I think it's going to work tandemly. It might work really well, Sandy, with the Surface Studio dial.
That's what
so
I'm
you
thinking.
Can dial the angle. And then you can drop text boxes and shapes along that angle and use the distribution along them. I think that's the ultimate goal. So that's a new tool. It's only to Fast Inside release Office 365.
On the PC.
On the Windows side, yes. Right. The other thing they just released, also on the Windows side only, is the thing called Quick Starter.
Right.
Which was a little...
controversial.
There was a lot of discussion. Yeah, that's the word. But it's a pretty... From a technology standpoint, it's pretty neat. Everybody should go look for Quick Starter. Basically, you type in a topic, and it creates the outline of a presentation by pulling web content. So if you want to do one on Elon Musk, Musk, you know, it would kind of create a storyline for you to fill in. Think education, school reports, and that's where a lot of the educators are a little concerned that it might be giving a little too much help or kind of making reports a little too uniform, but the idea behind it of how to integrate external data into a presentation is pretty neat.
And I think, speaking of that, I think some of us have a concern that it will, I don't know, it'll be like cliff notes for a PowerPoint, or we'll let students take a lot of shortcuts because it creates presentations. It does. I mean, when you say outline, it creates slides for you, a whole series of slides. Now, I don't think it creates the actual all the content on each slide, but it says this slide, we put an image, we designed this, and the header says, you know, if you're talking about, you know, like a baseball player, like early career, you know, or it'll give a topic. So it outlines it that way, and you kind of just need to fill in the blanks. So I don't know. When I tweeted about it, I said, will you use it for good or for evil? That was my take on it.
Yeah, I think education is going to have they're going to have to change a lot of their perspective on report creation because this type of technology is coming up. Anything else in news? I know. Oh, wait, I do. I the Presentation Guild today, when you're listening to this, if you're listening to it on release date, we have the Presentation Guild is hosting a legal webinar, which is today. And I get to play host to an actual lawyer who has a lot of great information about presentation design contracts. Somebody that Echo Swinford has used and we've jointly used on a couple of on a large project. If you're not a member of the Presentation Guild and you're an independent designer, you might want to consider it for this legal webinar because it's going to have a ton of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. To join the guild, it's $99. You get to attend the webinar for free.
Okay, let's jump into topic of discussion for the day. And here's kind of what I'm thinking. For print design, if a client says they need a letter size piece, or a client even Europe says the project needs to be their equivalent A1, we know exactly what the dimensions for that project are going to be. We also know where the final use is going to be, so we can work in our Photoshop files at the right resolution. You know, there's just a lot of known parameters. With PowerPoint, the page size is not always clear or consistent. So I see part of the issues are aspect ratio does not equate to a physical dimension. It's just the way things work in that realm. We'll talk about that. And another part is PowerPoint has updated its page sizes, which has kind of created some confusion out there. I think the updates are for the better, but
is
confusion.
They are for the better.
This afternoon, Nolan, Sandy, and myself, we're hopefully having a not too geeky conversation about page size options found in PowerPoint. Well, let's start with defining aspect ratio versus page size.
In general, I think, you know, you want to mostly be concerned with aspect ratio. So either 4:3, 16:9, that's generally what I sort of think about, as opposed to the actual page size, like 7.5 inches by 10 inches, because PowerPoint often thinks in inches and centimeters, and we use PowerPoint for print purposes. We need to consider both depending on the situation, as we'll sort of see.
Exactly. I mean, 16 by 9 is an aspect ratio. It can be very small or it can be extremely large. It's not a page size. So we got to separate the two. They correlate to each other, but we have to separate. They are two different things.
Yep. And as you hinted, and I hope we go into more detail on this, 16:9 is known to have at least a couple of page sizes, if not more.
Absolutely.
Right.
Let's actually go on that. Aspect ratio and page size are important to understand because we know that they work together. I mean, you can't have, well, I won't throw numbers out right now, but they just have to work together. In the land of PowerPoint, 16 by 9 has changed. At least the default page size that PowerPoint throws out there has changed, and it's a new page size now.
Exactly. So with a little history, up through PowerPoint 2010, Microsoft's page size for 16:9 was 10 inches wide by 5.63 inches tall. It couldn't be the 13.33 width size option that it currently is, because only in PowerPoint 2013 was the extra decimal to make it that size, that extra decimal to thousandths or three decimal places added.
Yeah, it's actually kind of interesting. If you go back, we used to have a lot of almost math. Like, you'd pull it into Photoshop, you'd set up like, wait a minute, that isn't really the right aspect ratio.
Right.
It's because you could only go two decimals in, and PowerPoint happily has given us that third decimal so we can do it. So the switch was basically keeping the height the same between a 4x3 and a 16x9, and it's really important for updating content from one size to another. And I think to verbally describe that, what it means is that everything stays in the same height position and only the width needs to be adjusted to convert from, say, a 4x3 to a 16x9. With the older size, a 4x3 was 7.5 inches tall. And in the older size, a 16x9 was 5.63 inches tall. What would happen is if you went to convert and say your logo was in that lower right-hand corner, well, on a 4x3, it would... that height didn't exist if you measured from the top down. So suddenly your logo would be off the slide. So PowerPoint's made a good decision and it's kind of enabled them to do some new tools and stuff, but that's the reason for the change. But it does add confusion.
I think it is very confusing, and I was just going to suggest that we put a link in to our notes. Echo Swinford has a great explanation of these differences So if you visit her website, I think that does a much better job. We'll try to explain it here, but go to her
site. Oh, yeah, the one where she kind of visually shows where things fall on and off. Yeah, I think that's we'll find it.
Yeah. And so to confuse everybody further, I'm going to talk about Keynote for a second. Keynote doesn't deal with inches or centimeters at all. Keynote thinks in pixel dimensions. So, you know, if you, the defaults that they give you when you're first starting a document are anywhere from 800 by 600 pixels all the way up to 1920 by 1080, although you can customize it to be whatever you want. But yeah, Keynote is wants you to think in terms of screen resolution and doesn't, which quite honestly is probably the correct, better way of doing it.
It's the better way.
But even me, I don't think in pixels. Like I couldn't tell you what my screen in front of me, what the pixels are on it. So I just think in inches for, you know, it's probably not the best way, but I'm always more comfortable thinking in inches.
Old print designer never goes away.
Yes. Although I can't think in pikas.
Oh, you can think of, I was just going to say that.
But I'm still looking forward to our pika episode.
Yeah.
Hey, I will say, this is just a throw out there. If you ever get a presentation and it's in a completely unusual size, or even more importantly, you have a 16x9, you click on a shape and you're like, why would something be that size? Mm-hmm. It's probably because it started life in Keynote, and when Keynote converted it over, because they don't work in inches, all based on the resolution, there's some really funky math and you end up some really weird sizes. Font sizes are always in decimal. Sizes will be different. So yeah, I think Keynote's actually the easier one to work with in this, just because it's all pixel based and going from Photoshop into it. But with PowerPoint, to wrap the topic up, I guess, is that it did make a change in 2013, was it? Right, that's what he said, right? 2013 is when they added the extra decimal. Mm-hmm. And it definitely is the way to go. I mean, it definitely makes things better.
So, all right, so back to PowerPoint. You were talking about size in inches for a 16:9 slide, but 4:3 has not changed, really. So the standard default, which is what we probably all grew up with PowerPoint on, being that 4:3 slide, that has always been 10 inches wide by 7 inches high.
And 7.5 inches high.
7.5, correct, right. I think that probably comes from the fact that most projectors and monitors, you know, a couple decades ago were all 4:3. Now they're mostly widescreen. But when PowerPoint was invented, it was 4:3. I had to look it up because part of me thought it might be because that's what 35 millimeter slides were. But 35 millimeter slides are actually 3:2. So I think they're definitely going for, you know, your standard old TV set, which
exactly the old TV. Sometimes you'll see that on an older program. You'll see the old 4:3 format.
And, you know, people are moving more and more towards widescreen in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because the screens are, but there are still some people that are just, they can't let go of the 4:3, even though, you know, I talk to a lot of clients and I'll say, you know, do you want both aspect ratios or do you want just widescreen? And they'll say, well, you know, we're more comfortable with the 4:3. I said, but, you know, where are you presenting this? Are all the screens in your office widescreen? Yes. Well, but why would you want that? Well, we're just more comfortable.
They don't want to convert everything because they have a huge library. Yeah. We're doing this right now for corporate clients. One of our projects here, we've got the new template approved now. And kind of the follow-up to that is here's 200 slide decks we need converted over. Could you just make them all look good so we have basically all of our slides ready to go? Like,
I've done a few of those.
Big tedious project, but it's got to be done by someone. So, I would agree. 4:3. I mean, again, aspect ratio 4:3, 4 units across by 3 units tall, doesn't equate to a physical size. But I think that we see all 4:3 projects set up in that 10 inches wide by 7.5 inches tall. It's very, very rare that 4:3 uses a different measurement.
Right. So the problem becomes going back and forth between 4:3 and 16:9 conversion. So the good news is, starting back in PowerPoint 2013, there were a lot of changes made with that release. This became a great built-in feature.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be you'd change page sizes and everything would get distorted. And if you didn't have a handy little plugin from a friend of ours, it would just be a mess. And you'd be going through slide by slide, you know, changing everything. And the thing that really bugged me was that it would distort things, but it seemed like it always put on lock aspect ratio, which means you had to then go check it off and fix it and then put it back. It was, anyway, it was just a real mess. But that's no longer on Mac and PC on the latest versions. You can go back and forth. Microsoft has made that much easier, except for stuff on your master, right? Exactly. Which I still don't understand. But if you have anything on the master, that will distort. Anything live on slides won't.
Yeah. The built-in conversion tool has been good, but I seriously, to this day, I find it confusing to use.
The maximize and sure fit. Scale up, scale down. On the Mac, I think it says scale up, scale down.
Does it really say
that? Yeah, I don't
have to go look at that.
Tell
us what they do.
So to your point, a circle stays a circle, Nolan, when we use this tool. But the big difference is how big things are scaled and if they want to be positioned off the slide. So the option to ensure fit, and this is the one you think says, well, ensure fit, make sure that everything on the slide stays on the slide, but it may become smaller than you want. So you'll have to go back and resize. Maximize, the other option, keeps things bigger, the same size, but then some of the items may be positioned off the slide. So it could be that even though you use this easy tool, no, it will be that you have to go back and make some adjustments.
Yeah, any way you do it, it's going to almost always involve some manual adjustment. So it's really a matter of, I mean, Control Z is my best friend.
Yeah.
I usually don't know which one I do. So I start off with Ensure Fit because I think that's the more preferable option. Mm-hmm. So I do Ensure Fit and I quickly do a scan of the slides. Oh, that didn't do what I wanted. Okay, let's redo it. Control Z.
Yep.
Now let's go back to maximize it and let's see what that did. And then I kind of decide which one to work with from there.
Yeah, I just checked on the Mac. It says scale or don't scale.
Oh. Interesting.
It's all very basically you try both and
that's what I do every single time.
So we use 4x3 and 16x9 presentations. Those are the only two I'm going to talk about. This, do you use any non-Microsoft sizes like in your page setup for either one of those? Like not the, when you click 16x9 and it gives you its page size 13.333x7.5, do you ever adjust that to be something different?
For letter, which I think we'll talk about in a second, I do. I also do tabloid size occasionally for print. I've even done square for printing purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally 16:10, although I think that is a default because some projectors and some screens are 16:10 actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think I've ever done anything in 16:10, but I have. You know, To answer the question, many users are satisfied with the 4:3 page size for standard print documents. They don't know the difference. But it's not a true U.S. letter size, which is 8.5x11. So then a few problems happen. Also, the 16:9 widescreen option is longer than the standard 11x8.5 page. So the page that's paper, I should say, that's in our printers. So if you print it out using 16:9, the ends are going to be cut off when you print, or they could be cut off when you print.
Yeah, that whole little scale to print out thing is going to be your best friend, but it's not going to produce things because it's a different, that's actually truly a different aspect ratio. Uh-huh. Hey, on the 16:10 thing, I'm sure this was part of the Microsoft thinking for including it because there's a lot of computer resolutions out there that are 1900x1200, not the 1900x1080.
Mm-hmm. And is that 16:10?
1920x1200 is a 16:10. And it looked like it was going to be a standard because it was on a ton of laptops have that resolution. Mm-hmm. And some projectors started having it. Some still do. It's just a little scale up. But it's not a standard. So it just kind of got skipped over. There are actual uses of 16:10, but they're so minimal that I don't think the majority of people are going to encounter it. So it's a little confusing point. Just go with 16:9 for the whole world.
Yeah. I've had one or two conference decks where the AV team has told me it's 16:10.
It comes up. You know, on the question of non-Microsoft page sizes, I do a lot of them that are literally 16 inches by 9 inches. So it's a 16:9 in a 16 inch by 9 inch. We do that quite a bit. And part of that is for working in a little better resolution in Photoshop when we're doing a lot of external imagery.
Mm-hmm.
But I had one just, I want to say last week, but I kind of want to block it out. So maybe it was a few weeks ago. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a bizarre one. The client supplied us their 16x9 template. And first of all, template is a very loose term used for this document, but it was 26.66 inches wide by 15 inches tall. There is a size I've never seen. I think the math works out, and we just used it as supply because that's what we were told, but there's some other problems that come up with using documents that are different page sizes, but there, so people do things. I personally think that one may have started in Keynote and then converted over, and those, you know, it is 16x9, so it just kind of stuck. I don't know. It was another one.
Yeah, if you don't pay, if you don't really look at it, you could be working in a weird inch size for forever and not realize it. And it's not that big a deal.
Until you start combining documents.
Right.
Okay, wait, but I got this one that really irritates me. And Nolan, you kind of mentioned it, and I was waiting to go into a full discussion on it. But that's the U.S. letter page size. This bugs me.
Yeah, so if you do the default pull down and you choose the one page setup that says letter, it's 7.5 inches by 10 inches. And we know that an actual letter page size is 8.5 by 11. So if you literally want 8.5 by 11, you have to manually create it as a custom size. It's just bizarre. I don't know.
I know I've personally mentioned this to the Microsoft team whenever we get together. It's like, they're like, that's a legacy problem. I'm like, yes, and it still exists.
Fix it.
It's confusing. But, you know, the dropdown, but it does say in the dropdown, U.S. letter 8.5 by 11. It says the dimensions. But then when you make it, your page size isn't it. Now, aspect ratio wise, it scales up, but why can't you just make it there? Now, here's the other part so I personally feel the default should be when you say 8.5 by 11, not only does it create the true 8.5 inches by 11 inches, it should also make them in portrait mode. Because if you're going to do a letter size document, I'm going to say that the vast majority, I mean, it's going to be a credible minority scenario where you're actually going to do it in landscape. You're going to almost always be emulating a Word document. You're going to be emulating a print piece. So why not make the default work with what is, I'm going to say, 95% of the instances. Oh, and then the other thing, this is where it gets really, really kills me. In Microsoft Word, you know, that other program, when you do letter, and you have to drill down a couple of things to find their page size setup, because, you know, it doesn't really do a lot. It is 8.5 by 11 in Word. That is their default saying, physical 8.5 by 11 sizing. So there's no parity between the programs.
It makes no sense. So I know that's a problem for you, but what are some other non 16x9 or 4x3 page size scenarios that you guys work with?
Yeah, so I mean, I mentioned occasionally we've done square for print things, but probably more often than not, if I'm using PowerPoint for professional printing, I need to put bleeds in. So let's say I'm doing a 8.5 by 11 document and I want actual bleeds, I actually have to make the PowerPoint larger than that. So I have to add 1/4 of an inch all around, or an eighth of an inch on each side. So it works out to a larger size, and then I'll actually put in fake cut marks when the PDF is made, so the printer will see it and be able to slice in. So it's hacking it. I mean, it's the kind of thing in InDesign where when you go to make the PDF, you just say, hey, add this extra space. Right. You can't do that in PowerPoint. So,
but I mean, that's funny that we're doing that in PowerPoint. I too just created an ad for my hometown newspaper to announce our class reunion, and I created it at a 3.58 by 3 inches using PowerPoint, of course. And I just think I kind of smile about that, because first of all, it's my hometown newspaper. I think they're still using key lines. I exaggerate, but it worked out really, really well to create that in PowerPoint.
We've also done, and I know Troy, you've done this, we've done some super wide stuff. Like, you know, there actually might be three screens on stage, but it's one single PowerPoint file that's basically three screens wide. And sort of in our head as we're creating it, we'll, you know, the hardware splits it up between the screens, the AV hardware, but we can basically think in three screens. So it doesn't, you know, it can be one thing that sort of moves from one screen to the other as it goes across the page, or it could literally look like three different files.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? The new guides, the newer guides where you can have guides on the master, layout, and then you have guides on the slide layout level itself, and they're differentiated. I use those for that type of scenario all the time, where we put ones that divide up where the live areas are, so you can kind of think in those terms, and things snap to those guides too, so it's really handy. So yeah, on the non-standard aspect ratios and the page sizes that go with them, we do a lot of what I call ultra-wide presentations, exactly what you're talking about, Nolan. They may be 3 side-by-side 16x9s. So it's really any presentation wider than 16x9. And I kind of think we're nearing a time when they're becoming more standard. I mean, mm-hmm. You just got to think of, 4, 6, 8, 10K television projection. Those are all ultra-wides. They're basically packing a lot more pixels into it. Mm-hmm. But something that PowerPoint doesn't have in its preset list, so they become kind of custom.
I haven't had to work with them much, so you're the expert in that. Go ahead and let us know what you do.
So what they are is these are really unique page sizes, and they are based 100% on the projection setup. So the physical hardware is what's going to determine how we design things. The goal is to have PowerPoint for these events 100% match the equipment setup. So it's not like PowerPoint gets to say, oh, I'm going to do this. Many of them would be hard to be a preset because every event is a little bit different.
Right.
I'll give you an example of two projects we have in the shop right now that we're developing templates for, and then later we get to develop the speaker support content. One is an ultra wide. It's 5,460 pixels across and still the standard 1080 height. So that really is, it's three projectors wide. It's almost 16x9, three 16x9 side by side. The reason it's not is, again, some of the hardware. There's two blend regions where the projection overlaps There's two regions where the projectors overlap and create kind of a feathered, or what you call edge blending, and those are 155 pixels each. But the important thing is we're given the dimensions. We are going to project 5,460 pixels wide. In PowerPoint, we turn that into, by doing the math, it's 54.6 inches wide by 11.5 inches tall. So that's one project. Another one is a little bit simpler. It's only a two-projector blend, so there's just one overlap region, and that overlap is a single 155. The other one was 155 times 2. This one's 150 pixels, but the page size on that one is 30 inches wide by 9 inches tall. So again, just we do the math each time. We get the specs. We run the math. We come up with a Photoshop template and a PowerPoint template with page sizes that correlate to each other. Uh-huh. So we can have content move seamlessly from one to the other. So what we design in Photoshop, we're working at the real dimension. It's a ton of fun to design these things. It's also really hard to sometimes think, because it's, when you're designing, you're running slideshow, it's just this little teeny strip across your screen, and you got to go, that little strip is 16 feet tall. Do I really want the words to be full height? So you got to think a little bit differently in your design.
Wow.
It's fun.
I know who to go to if I need that kind of help.
Have we exhausted the whole page size thing? Because
I think so.
I think, so we've covered 4x3, covered 16x9. We covered unique things. We covered our gripes, US letter size. We've covered... There's a lot there. Nolan, do we have that listener?
Yep, we do. So we got a listener question, which is very cool. So keep them coming. We've had a few so far. So this comes from Emily Davis of Emily Davis Consulting.
I know Emily.
Yeah, in Boulder, Colorado. So Emily says, I'm very much an amateur in design, but I present anywhere between 4 and 8 times per month for nonprofits, corporate responsible companies, and more. I always have a struggle in convincing my clients to use the best of what I know in design. Thanks to us all, she says. I get terrible slide decks to work with that don't include brand guidelines. You know the drill. Do you have any tips on how to simply and effectively explain to clients that presenting is more than just putting text onto a screen and into a subpar template?
I love that phrase right there.
So she compliments our insights and has a big shout out to the Presentation Guild. So Sandy, what do you think about this?
Okay, so I do this just like breathing. When someone comes to me to work on a new project, I explain them my design approach, including then I cite, and we've talked about this before, but I'll cite scientific research data on how humans retain information in certain ways. specifically Richard Mayer, I use over and over again. So I asked them, are you comfortable moving forward working with me with that design approach, which means basically less is more. And once we're in the thick of things, I'll provide options for slide layouts. One option will show exactly what they requested and the other will show my recommendations. And the recommendations usually win.
That's great. That's smart. I mean, I don't always have such a formal discussion like that, but certainly if I'm working with somebody new, I'll make sure they've seen my portfolio and kind of understand. And I mean, you can also, I think we all can also get a sense of people, clients when they first call us, depending on sort of what they first ask us for. I mean, certainly if they say, I've seen your stuff, I totally love it, the simplicity, then you kind of know you're on the same page. But I'm going to answer sort of in a slightly different, for a different audience. I mean, so Emily, you're talking about clients, but people have the same issue dealing with their bosses and their colleagues, because a lot of times I'll have people in my trainings that say, this is it. This is exactly how I want to present, but my boss wants something else. Or, you know, my boss isn't here in the training and I'm not sure I can convince him how to do that. So in those situations where, you know, in one sense, we're just, you're managing up, which is a whole business skill in and of itself. But I have two sort of big suggestions on that. The first is, if this is somebody you're working with, you know, consistently, and you're trying to get them to change, collect good presentations and show them around. I mean, whether you do this overtly or, you know, passive aggressively, but, you know, collect good presentations and show what's out there. Because I think the biggest thing, I always say this, people make bad presentations because they see bad presentations and they assume that's all there is. Mm-hmm. So if you can show them, you know, your competitors, you know, other companies, you know, that your boss might like, and, you know, I have one anecdote about this. When I was working at an agency, GE was one of our big clients, and there was a whole team working on the GE account, and Beth Comstock was and is their CMO. And, you know, I heard from the head of that GE group in my agency that he really wanted them to up their game and all that. And I, you know, we took him through training and we tried to do that. And then I cracked open one of Nancy's books. I'm not sure if it was Slideology or Resonate. And there was a whole little case study on slides that they had designed for Beth Comstock, which were nothing but, you know, a word or two and these beautiful images. So I photocopied those pages.
Yeah.
I sent it to the team leader and I said, this is what your client's boss presents like. So get on board.
Good for you.
And
awesome.
Yeah. So that was a great situation. The other thing would be, as you're trying to convince people you work with to sort of design better, don't do it all at once. Don't, you know, if your boss has a big, you know, annual keynote, don't take that opportunity to try to change everything all at once. Do it little by little, you know, change a chart here, do a couple slides here, you know, do it on sort of less important presentations. And you can still, you know, maybe design a couple slides the old way, a couple slides in the new way, and say, hey, isn't this better? Here's a better solution. Because, yeah, make the medicine go down a little bit easier, but little by little.
So yeah, going with Emily's original thing is how do you kind of plus up the content to be professional? And I have a line where I say, you know, where we're kind of in that discussion point of deciding what it is we're going to accomplish. I say, listen, we have kind of three levels of looking at presentations. Level one is we're just going to make sure technically it's good. Are there custom fonts that we need to worry about? Is there embedded video or media we need to worry about? You know, is content actually on the slides? You know, did you use the right page setup? Did you use the right page size? So, you know, we kind of have this like very, very superficial. We're not going to look at your content for content. But we're just going to make sure the presentation works. I go, you know, we're going to do that with everything because we want to make sure the presentation goes.
Yeah.
The second one is we can go through and we always want to make sure that for the audience, they don't see things looking unprofessional. So like things like the titles, we would like to go through a pass of the entire presentation or all presentations, make sure those titles adhere to the template, which would mean they're consistent in their size, their position, they're not going to jump around, they're not going to change color. You know, I kind of list off, you know, basically a superficial presentation makeover. It's those things that aren't noticeable unless they're wrong. And then we say we can go into, you know, we can really help you with the content and do a lot of visual layouts. We can remove this, you know, 19 point bullet list and replace it with four buckets because that's what the content looks like. And so we kind of start with where you said, Nolan. We do the things that are not noticeable, and then we progress to there to the things that are very noticeable, but probably completely alter the message being received because it's not as bullet driven or text heavy, or, you know, there's wordsmithing and everything else that comes into line. So
you don't set your clients up. They do have expectations because they come to you because of your work, first of all, right? So mm-hmm. I think that makes our jobs a little bit easier. They know the kind of work we do and know what to expect to a point. But if I'm hearing you two correctly, you work more on a project by project basis to establish those expectations. You don't set those up when they come on board.
No, I think client based. I think as example from Emily here, she's receiving presentations for these different speaking engagements, and you're probably working with these people only once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like an ongoing client because it's another presenter coming in. We're like, you know, your presentation really doesn't match the level of everything else. You're just going to visually come across not as professional right out of the gate if your presentation is like this. Mm-hmm. You know, your speaker support isn't really helping you much. So I'm kind of approaching that. Yeah, I mean, we have clients that turn around. If something comes in from, you know, one of our larger medical clients, we know the style guide. They know what to expect. We know we're going to do it. We do all the executive presentations for a large automotive, and you know, we get a script right from the executective communication team. They don't even send us a template or anything. They say, here, turn this into visuals. So you know, those ones we have set patterns. We know the boundaries. It's when we don't know the boundaries I start these conversations. Emily, we all agree with you. We feel your pain.
Yeah.
The subpar template, we all see them where people say, here's my template. Like, no, that's four slides with stuff on top of them. It has nothing underlying. And yeah, everybody has a different take on it.
Well, I will add one last thing. When I'm working on a case-by-case basis, one of the first questions I'll ask is, are you okay with me moving some of this text into your notes area?
That's a great line.
Well, so that way you don't lose any of your thoughts. They're still captured, and then I will tweak the text on the slide a little bit, and then I always convert it to that Word document, you know, with the slides, the Word handout, where the notes are side by side mm-hmm. with the slide, and I give that to them, convert it to a PDF, give that to them, and I usually have happy campers.
Okay, well, the page size of a PowerPoint project is a very technical item that I don't think most everyone, well, they won't even consider it. It's not there as a surface level thing. The aspect ratio is a pretty visual thing that everybody can see. But as a professional presentation designer, it's just another important consideration that can impact the final deliverable. It impacts your workflow, and it can even impact a project timeline and ultimately the billing if it's not confirmed and addressed early in the project's setup phases. I think we had a great conversation. Hope it was of use to many people out there, and look forward to hearing back from you on our next episodes. Okay, presentation pro tips or tech tips. And I got a fun little one this time. I'm just going to lead off because it's a fun one. So if you have a MacBook Pro, you get a little power block. First of all, it's tiny. I'm already envious of that. And second of all, it just has the two little prongs that pull out. You know, you could plug it in anywhere. And a lot of people will replace that with a cord. Every Windows laptop you get is going to have a 5 to 6 foot, you know, tail to plug into the wall. I kind of want a lightweight travel environment, so I don't want to carry an extra 5 foot long cable. So these new computers I have, they came with the jumbo oversized super thick. I mean, it was like coiling rope. And it was basically, I'm like, wow, that thing coiled up is the size of other things I have coiled up. So I went online, did a little research, and I'm very excited. I got a 1 foot extension. It's got the three little prongs that plug into the back of the power supply. So it's not an extension cord. It physically goes into the power supply, and it's just 1 foot. So, you know, it's sitting right here on the desktop next to me. You know, it's right
there.
It's
a great idea.
It's just...
Do you have a link to that?
I will put, you know what, there were actually, well, it depends on the type of laptop power brick you have, because there's two-prong ones, there's three, okay, there's two different types of three-prong ones. I'll put a link to the one I bought, which obviously only works for the power blocks I have. There's my little tech tip.
Well, I want to remind everyone about the Presentation Guild salary survey. It's been out for a few months now. And whether you have your own business, like the three of us, and need to need insight on what to charge for your next gig, or whether you're an admin who creates presentations for others and you're negotiating a salary, take a look at that survey. We have one of our members actually benefited from it recently, and I'd like to pass that opportunity on to all of our readers. Visit the Presentation Guild site. It's available for anyone, whether you're a member or not.
So my my tip is a tutorial that I just put up on YouTube. I just finally started a little YouTube channel. Hopefully I'll be putting up some little tutorials here or there. So the first one was in honor of Hans Rosling, who died a couple weeks ago. He was a kind of a huge figure in data visualization. And this he was kind of famous for these morphing animated bubble charts and other types of charts to show really complex data sets. So he created software to do that, but you can do the same thing in PowerPoint using Morph and also breaking apart bubble charts. So it's a 5-minute tutorial. It's up there. We'll put the link in the show notes, and you can be like Hans Rosling, all within the confines of PowerPoint. So it's
courtesy of Nolan Hanks.
Yes.
It's an awesome
tutorial. It's a fun hack too. It's fun to play.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a graphic design studio team focused on presentation design. Check us out online at www.tlccreative.com. We're on Facebook at the Facebook/TLC Creative Services. And we have a presentation blog, the PowerPoint. Let me try that one. And a presentation blog, thepowerpointblog.com.
I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, where you can get lots of downloads and free goodies and stuff. If you're interested in training, you can give me a call. We do customized training for organizations all over the country in data viz and presentation. And don't forget to rate us on iTunes and tell your friends.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website at presentationwhiz.biz, my blog at pptwizblog, or the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. Or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.